This is the best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the steamy hot city of Los Angeles, California. They searched and searched and searched for a place to call the Fox Sports Radio and Premier Networks home, and they decided to find the closest place to the sun, and they succeeded. What up? Hope you had a great weekend, whether you went to the beach, you went to the mountains, you went to a lake, or you just sat your fat fanny on the couch and watched some TV. Hope you had yourself a good weekend. Yeah, I did double duty most of last weekend. Dan Patrick's show, this show, was off of this show end of the week. But don't worry, I grinded this weekend, a mix of Summer League on TV, hanging out by the pool, got a round of golf in, and went to Angels-Doyers Game 3 at the Big A, which, John Ramos, I do believe the Angels took 2 of 3 from your Dodgers. Is that correct?
They did. Haney pitched a good game yesterday for the Angels. Yeah.
Yes, he did. Fellow Oklahoma State alum, Andrew Haney, had 10 strikeouts over 7 innings. Only really made one mistake. That was to Yasiel Puig after getting squeezed in the third inning by the umpire. And Puig hit it, not quite Bo Jackson, Terry, Shohei Ohtani off the bench with a pinch hit Showtime home run. Anyway, that's all we're going to talk about with Freeway Series Baseball. The All-Star teams were announced, sort of. It's like, oh, here's the All-Star teams, but we're going to name one more guy, and then we're going to add some more dudes because other guys will pull out, right? And eventually, as with the Pro Bowl, most of the guys who belong in will belong in. But do they actually belong in? We will clean up the mess, which is All-Star game selections, later on in the show. But what I find to be fascinating about LeBron a week ago, last week, hosting this show, hosting the Dan Patrick Show, we were reacting to the news that LeBron James is going to be an L.A. Laker, leaving behind Cleveland the second time around. And what was fascinating, is how everyone has overcorrected for their past mistakes, right? Like, in the past, LeBron has had a big show, and it's caused a big stir, and he's had a big article. This time, it was, call the Lakers, get on a G5, and fly to Europe with your wife. In the past, Dan Gilbert has gone Sherman and burned everything down to the sea. This time, it was, hey, dude, thanks for everything. Come back anytime. Everyone has overcorrected. The Oklahoma City Thunder didn't want to go into the tax, famously, with James Harden. So up until the time to which they buy out Carmelo Anthony, they're $150 million into the tax. Forget about the salaries. Over $300 million in salaries. And though they will save some money when they eventually part ways with Melo, the fact is they'll still be in the tax. They've overcorrected for their past mistakes. But what's the most interesting part about relationships, quite honestly, is post-divorce breakup stories. Not how they broke up, but why. No one shares the good stories about the marriages that make it. Right? They just don't. No one says, like, yeah, we're in year 45 of marriage, but man, for the first 35 years, I hated her guts and she hated mine. Now we sleep in separate bedrooms and we just stay married to say we stay married. Nobody does that. When you get divorced, and you have divorced, the reason that people don't go to court is they don't want full disclosure. They don't want to know. They don't want all of their idiosyncrasies on trial. They don't want all their failures as a husband or a wife to be made into public record. Especially when you're celebrities. That's what's happened with LeBron as he's left Cleveland. Every time he's left somewhere, you've gotten a little bit different sense of who he is and how you feel about it. Even Dan Gilbert, who by all accounts seems to be a fairly miserable dude, right? He's worth like $6-7 billion. And people will say, well, look, he's miserable because his NBA team just lost a substantial evaluation because they lost LeBron James. Two things you should know. One, yes, it will lose its value, but they'll probably actually make money this year as opposed to losing money going into the tax the last couple years. And two, and this is really, really important, the guy owns Quicken Loans. He's worth $5 billion without the team. Everybody wants to make money and win championships and be competitive. And this is it's an ego thing to own a pro team, but this is not his major source of revenue. Don't worry about Danny Boy. He'll be just fine. But we start to learn more about guys. And I find the Kyrie Irving divorce, which is now almost a year since it's been consummated, I find that to be really interesting. Because here we are again with LeBron James going to play with a young, unproven team. Right? That's what happened when he went back to Cleveland. Sure, he brought in Kevin Love, and there were some other pieces that were added. But when he first went to Cleveland, that was a young and very unproven team. And almost overnight, they were turned around. Jason Lloyd has covered him. So too has Joe Varden. Joe Varden's covered him for Cleveland.com. Jason Lloyd said, quote, "I will freely admit the relationship between James and Irving was worse than I thought. The Kyrie-LeBron relationship was worse than I thought. I told LeBron that on opening night. I said, you guys did a great job of fooling me. I had no idea. And I won't tell you exactly what his response was, but he more or less agreed that it was not a good relationship between the two of them. The little brother thing did annoy the crap out of Kyrie." Joe Varden, Cleveland.com, also a local radio host. "LeBron did all kinds of stuff to Kyrie, almost like hazing, just the kind of way in which he would treat him, the things he would say to him, the things he would say about him. I think certainly that's part of it. You know, Kyrie resented how much attention, how much power, how much sway LeBron had within the organization on a number of levels. Again, we've all allowed LeBron to say we shouldn't have traded Kyrie, but he did absolutely nothing to keep him here until it was too late. When it came out, there was a whole month before anybody had any idea that the trade was going to be Boston. LeBron didn't do anything. There was no love lost between them." These historical notes are really important, because if this fails in L.A., or if he's not, if it fails in L.A. because they're not good enough, LeBron James will somehow avoid criticism, avoid critique. Look, I don't know how much of the blame pie, you want to go blame pie, LeBron deserves for the fact that they didn't win more in Cleveland, they didn't win more in Miami, or what they will do in L.A. It's a no-brainer for the Lakers to go after LeBron. But the part to which you got to be cautious of, and I think Magic and Rob Pelinka are cautious of, is how much power, how much pull, how much do you listen to him? If you don't listen to him, he will shut down on you. He will pout on you. If you do listen to him, oftentimes that can create a wedge between him and whoever else is on the team, especially a young star. If you do listen to him, it also lessens your power. Remember, when you hear Dan Gilbert say, "I got my team back," whether that's real or whether that's kind of in an inflated statement that some have said they've heard Dan Gilbert say, you understand that though Dan Gilbert can be small and petty, the fact is there is some reality to it. LeBron's one of those guys that wants things to happen, and then when they happen, he acts like, "Oh, what are you talking about?" You know what LeBron does? You see it in European soccer. You see it with the influence of European players in the NBA. And I don't know if you've ever seen this, where guys will be super, super physical, right? With their lower body, they'll stick out a knee, a hip, you know, a groin, an elbow. And then when the ref's looking, they got their hands up like, "What? I didn't do anything." Do you know that look? You see it at times on, what are they called in soccer, set pieces? On corners, right? Where they're pushing, they're shoving, they're grabbing, they're kneeing each other, they're elbowing each other, and the ref looks like, "What? I didn't do anything. I did nothing." That's really the European influence on the NBA. It's not just the flopping. It's the using all different parts of your body and keeping your hands where the refs can see him and then act like he didn't do anything. That's LeBron. That's what he did with Kyrie. He rode Kyrie, and then even after they won a championship, he wanted Kyrie traded for his boy, Chris Paul. Then when it came back around to him, he's like, what? I didn't do anything. I didn't trade him. I didn't want him traded. I didn't want him traded to Boston. I didn't want him. We were good. We were in the finals. We came back from 3-1, and then you know, last year we lost to the Warriors. Like, what? He's done this with multiple coaches. He didn't get David Blatt fired, but he didn't save him. He didn't get David Griffin fired, but he didn't save him. If you want to say he didn't fire David Griffin, that's fine. You can live by that lie. But the truth is that if LeBron James picks up the phone and calls Dan Gilbert and says, Dan, if you don't re-sign David Griffin, I'm not playing this year. Guess what? Guess who's going to be gainfully employed with the Cleveland Cavaliers? That's power. So I think the learning from the dysfunction within the Kyrie-LeBron relationship, why that ended, it also gives you clarity on Kyrie. Got so many nonsensical lies told about Kyrie. Well, he wanted to be his own guy. He wanted to have his own show. I know from three sources he wanted to go two places. He wanted to go to San Antonio or Boston. Why? Because he thought you could win there because they have really good coaches. Wait. He wanted to go there because he'd be the face of the team. Not really. He wanted to go there because those are professionally run organizations. You don't have LeBron making calls, going through Rich Paul, who represents half the team. LeBron's boy ends up being the coach, and there's the, can I coach him, can I not coach him? We're not going to practice anymore because LeBron doesn't want to practice, so it's really hard to get together and to have kind of one mindset in a game. I'm not sitting here telling you LeBron James stinks. Far from. I'm telling you it's really interesting what he's become as a guy who comes in and immediately energizes your franchise, give you a chance to win a championship, fills up the arena, and plays at as high a level as anybody's played in the last 15 years in the NBA. There is a downside. He's manipulative. And then he does this, he does that thing, what's it called, where he does things without taking ownership over them. You remember when LeBron said this?
Try to do whatever I could do to help the kid out, be the best player he can be. And I wish the kid great health. The kid wanted to do what was best for his, for his career. And, you know, I try to do whatever I could, just try to help the kid be as great as he could be or as great as he wanted to be. And that's it.
Yeah. Words do, in fact, matter. Okay. They do matter. And though he may think calling Kyrie Irving a kid is a way of expressing, hey, man, he's only at the time 25 years old. Now he's 26. Got a world in front of him. He can play for 10 more years at a super high level. When you're 25 years old, when you've hit the game-winning shot in Game 7 of the NBA Finals, when you're a perennial all-star and a member of Team USA, you know what I'm not anymore? I'm not a child. So, as we look back to what happened in Cleveland, it's like reading divorce proceedings. You know? I have no doubt in my mind. I said this on my show and on Colin's show last year. I would tell you the nail in the coffin had nothing to do with basketball, with him and the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron James came out in full support of Hillary Clinton, and Dan Gilbert put his money and support behind President Trump. And if you want to tell me like that doesn't happen, how many relationships have you lost over this presidency? How many friendships have you lost? I guarantee at minimum one, and there is no maximum. Even if you haven't told your friend they're not your friend anymore, I'm guessing there are people. Just post something on your Facebook page. Either side. You will lose a couple of friends over this. That's how we become. And when you already kind of don't like the guy, when you're not able to keep guys in town, when you're kind of fried on the place that you grew up in, you came back and won a championship, there's another team that's just better than you, there's just a limitation of the guys around you, and then you're that politically divided with the guy you're collecting checks from and making money from, keep in mind, LeBron James is making as much or more playing for Dan Gilbert, playing in the NBA, but how LeBron sees the world. He's a man. He's a leader. He's an alpha. Everyone else benefits from his presence. The divorce proceedings, the divorce trial, sometimes way more interesting, oftentimes way more interesting than the marriage itself.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Chris Mannix joins us live from Las Vegas. Of course, Mannix is now an NBA insider for Yahoo Sports. You can also hear him on Fox Sports Radio, noon to 3 Eastern time, along with NBA champion Caron Butler right here on Fox Sports Radio. Mannix, we talked last week about LeBron James joining the Lakers, but it's totally different when you go to Vegas, because you're surrounded not only with all of your media brethren, but with all the NBA players, the NBA front office people. What's the league's reaction to the Lakers and what they've so far put around LeBron James?
Well, it's a healthy dose of skepticism, I think, Doug, with this group. I mean, there's a level of understanding about what the Lakers are saying it's going to mean with this group, but a lot of doubts about what's going to come from it. I mean, look, one thing we know is that the Lakers' practices are going to be great. Like, you've got intense guys, Rondo, Stevenson, LeBron. They're going to change the culture of Los Angeles. But, I mean, a whole bunch of non-shooters. I mean, that seems strange. I mean, LeBron, I understand the need to take the ball out of LeBron's hands to ease his burden a little bit in that way, but he's still going to get double teams, and he's going to be throwing the ball out to guys that can't shoot. So skepticism is a word I'd use that a lot of people are having around here.
DeMarcus Cousins signs with the Warriors. NBA Twitter goes crazy, handing them the trophy. And then the reality is that twofold, Mannix. One, he ain't going to be ready till March. Two, even if he is healthy, as much as you would think it's addition by addition, it dramatically changes them. Some for the better, but the potential is some for the worse, specifically the defensive end of the floor. What's the league's reaction as of now to what the Warriors are doing in reconstructing outside of the Hampton Five?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a level of incredulousness that DeMarcus Cousins mostly was willing to take this type of contract, but we all know the offers out there for a big contract weren't there. I mean, look, your concerns were valid, Doug, that, you know, how is he going to defend? He's not a great defender anyway. How is he going to defend when he comes back? But the reality is, I mean, if he's not effective, Jordan Bell will step in there. He's going to be at most a 20, 25-minute-per-game type of guy with this team. They don't believe that he's going to gripe about his role because he knows what's at stake for him in this coming off season. So there's plenty of optimism amongst the people in Golden State that they've got themselves an absolute steal here. And, you know, a lot of conviction, I think, from other NBA people that it's going to work out just fine with Cousins, who's really just replacing – you know, JaVale McGee and Zaza Pachulia.
I agree with you, but again, we're thinking that DeMarcus Cousins, during his time off and rehabbing, is going to be, are we assuming he's going to be okay with those minutes, right? Like, are you going to be okay with starting and then coming out of the game? You know, can he play when he doesn't have the basketball? Can he?
I think though, Doug, I mean, a lot of this has been conveyed to DeMarcus. I mean, when Steve Kerr and Bob Myers found out about this, I think they had a pretty frank conversation with DeMarcus's representatives about what his role was going to be. And I think this is all a long game for DeMarcus. He's got a chance to get healthy. He's got a chance to get a ring. He's got a chance to maybe rid himself of some of the toxicity that's around him. I think he's going into this with his eyes wide open.
Where are we with Kawhi Leonard?
Nowhere, really. I mean, you know, I'll tell you this much. There are teams out there that believe that they have an offer San Antonio would accept, but they're not going to make those offers because of the contract and the health of Kawhi. That's kind of, you know, sort of the standstill we've been stuck at this point. The Spurs, from the people I've talked to that have contacted them, still showing no sense of urgency to make this deal. The guess is still before training camp, they make a deal involving Kawhi, but at this point, nobody has any idea where he's going to end up.
Where do you think he ends up?
I still think they'll find a way to make a deal with the Lakers. I think the biggest question, Doug, and you know, you're out there in LA, you know a lot about this as well. I think the biggest question is draft considerations. I don't think the Lakers would blink about anybody on that roster. You want Ingram, you want Kuzma, we'll make that deal happen. But how deep into the well of draft picks do you go, especially with 2021 or 2022 lurking out there as a potential, a year without the one and done rule? So I think that's what's scaring a team like LA off from making a big offer.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you. I think Ingram, Ingram or Kuzma, preferably Ingram, they would be okay parting with. And then maybe one other guy. You know, the problem is the more they see Josh Hart tear up summer league, the more they like Josh Hart. But I could see one or two guys and a draft pick. But yes, I think it's a combination of both. You don't need to move mountains, especially when, again, even as much as you want Kawhi and he probably wants to be there, there's other guys that you can get if you're a year away anyway, and you don't have to give up all of these resources to get them.
Sure. No, I completely agree with that. I would say, though, that counting on Kawhi to come to L.A. next summer, I wouldn't do that, because I don't even think that Kawhi Leonard's conviction about coming to L.A. is as strong as Paul George's was. I mean, if Kawhi Leonard was fully healthy last season, I don't think we're having this conversation. I think he signs that 5-year Supermax, and he's still the San Antonio Spur. So I don't know that he's in love with the idea of coming to play for the Lakers as much as even Paul George was. That's why maybe there is, if the Lakers are fixated on him and think he's the perfect complement to LeBron, there is an urgency to get a deal done.
Chris Mannix joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. There's talk of Jimmy Butler being at his wit's end with Karl Anthony Towns. As Kat is a little bit of a different guy, like some of these younger guys, what's the reality to it? Does he buy in for another year in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, I just, look, if it was another team run by somebody else, I might think it's more likely that a Jimmy Butler gets moved. But that's just not how Tom Thibodeau operates. I mean, he is constantly in this sort of win-now type of mode. He loves Jimmy Butler. He traded for Jimmy Butler. And I think it's more likely we see, like, the Bulls band get back together with Joakim Noah winding up out there, or somebody else from that 2011 Bulls team winding up in that mix. You're right. It is. There's a very clear difference in style and difference in attitude between the veterans that Tibbs brought in and the young guys that are currently there. Can that bridge be kind of connected over the next 6 to 8 months? I don't know, but I don't think that Jimmy Butler's going to be moved in that time period.
I was told, and Chris Mannix joining us, and of course calls Boston home, I was told that a lot of these stories about Kyrie, just untrue. Like, even the list that he's of teams from last summer, he really wanted San Antonio or Boston. He wanted stable, well-run, well-coached organizations. Yeah, he wanted to be the guy, but I think it's one of those things where he just didn't love the dysfunction and the top-heaviness and the way in which, frankly, LeBron had such a big hand in so much of what was going on in Cleveland. But then these stories continue to they spiral to the, next year he could end up in New York, or next year he ends up in Brooklyn. What's the reality to Kyrie and his relationship with the Celtics?
I think the relationship is strong. The relationship with Brad Stevens is even stronger. But the reality is that Kyrie's a different kind of guy, and nobody can really get a great read on them. Now, you talk to people, some people within the Celtics express confidence about him coming back, signing a 5-year deal. But there are others that will tell you that there's real anxiety about Kyrie. And one of the biggest pieces of evidence of that is the likelihood they hold on to Terry Rozier all the way through next season. I mean, you would think that Terry Rozier, especially with it likely being Marcus Smart coming back, would be a luxury they could deal. They don't look at it like that. Until Kyrie's name is on a contract term, I don't think they even think about dealing a Terry Rozier. So I think that everything is good with Kyrie in Boston, with Danny, with Brad, with all those people. But, the pull of New York, of playing in that New York area, is real for Kyrie Irving. And with so many teams out there, Doug, with max cap space, some with double max cap space, there are going to be opportunities for him, not just go to a place, but to team up maybe with somebody he wants to play with.
How secure do you think Luke Walton is as head coach of the Lakers?
I mean, I look at it, and I don't really have any insight necessarily into his relationship with LeBron and everything else, but you just have to look at it objectively and say the front office didn't hire him, and LeBron is a challenging player to coach. I know Ty Lue said LeBron's easy, but that's a little bit misleading. I mean, in practice, maybe he's easy, but LeBron consumes a lot of the basketball oxygen. He has a lot of say in how a team plays. He has a lot of pull, obviously, with that front office. I think Luke Walton has to win. I think he not only has to get into the playoffs, but I think he's maybe got to win a round in the playoffs in order for him to remain as the head coach there. If they miss the playoffs, very easy to see a scenario where Magic and LeBron collaborate on finding the next coach.
I completely agree with you. If they miss the playoffs or if it goes bad, and you're right. He's the one guy in that organization that was hired by Genie, not hired by Pelinka. Even the assistants were hired when Pelinka and Magic were there.
Right.
That said, they do all think, I mean, he survived last season and the LeVar stuff and injuries and dysfunction and end up looking like a guy who looks like the real deal. We will see moving forward. Chris Mannix joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. So what's left? Clint Capella's left out there? Like, what else is out there?
Well, you know, Capella gets done because, you know, even if somebody offers him a four-year max, Houston's going to match it. Right now, they're, you know, kind of going through the minutia and trying to find a way to make it more team-friendly with that deal. But he's going to wind up back in Houston. The questions that are out there are guys like Marcus Smart, guys like Rodney Hood, and those the people within those for those players, their reps, they're kind of looking to Sacramento right now. I mean, Sacramento is still a team with some flexibility, and as you saw with the completely crazy Zach LaVine contract that they offered, crazy for them because they've already got a bunch of young two guards in that mix. They're willing to do nutty stuff sometimes, and there are people, in the case of Smart, people within Sacramento that really like him. I could see them coming after him with some type of offer sheet, but those are the two guys that maybe, I don't want to call them difference makers, though Smart certainly is one in Boston. Those are the two biggest names still to work out.
Great stuff. Chris Mannix, check him out Sundays with Caron Butler at noon Eastern time till 3 Eastern time. And, of course, read his work in Yahoo Sports. Follow him on Twitter. Well, let me go one last thing.
Sure.
Most disappointing rookie so far at Summer League?
Everybody is running away from Trae Young like he's the Titanic sinking right now. I mean, really.
It's bad.
Like,
Chris, it was bad. I've watched all four games. It was bad. I know he hit shots against the Knicks. It was not good.
But I'll even tell you that, you know, and I haven't talked to anybody within Atlanta, but people that have talked to Atlanta, I'm starting to now hear like, well, he wasn't our guy. He was this guy's guy. You know how that goes. But it was more, you know, this guy up top said this about Trae Young. At this point, you don't know who was behind Trae Young. Hopefully, it's just, you know, a freshman coming out and being too overly hyped and he works out, but he's the one guy that's drawing the most attention in a negative way.
Great stuff as always, man. Chris Mannix from Yahoo Sports. Thanks, Mannix.
You got it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
There's some surprises. There's some snubs. There's good arguing. The biggest snub in the AL is Blake Snell, who Snell is a 2.09 ERA. On a terrible Tampa Bay team. He's also 12-4, 132 strikeouts in 116 innings. The players got to pick their own. They got Luis Severino, Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, Chris Sale, and Corey Kluber. It's hard to question any of that group, right? The must-have guy was Blake Tiernan, who's 5-1, 0.81 ERA, 22 saves, 24 chances. And they have Sin-Su Chu, who's fine, but not really an all-star. The biggest thing is this. The American League is really hard because the American League's got all the good players, right? And first thing is, I don't really understand. I don't understand actually at all why every team has to be represented. Can somebody explain to me why? Because I believe, though it's a celebration of the sport, we should be celebrating the best of the sport. Jose Berrios, Joe Jimenez, like, dude, Joe Jimenez, do you know how bad he was last year? Last year he had a 12.34 ERA. A 12.34 ERA. Now this year it's a 2.85, and he's pitched in 44 games as a reliever, but like, really? Really? So two things here in order to fix it. One, most importantly, you don't have to have every team represented. And you don't have to double up on every position. You double up on catchers. But I mean, it should be an all-star team. The depth of guys you need to have is at pitcher, so guys don't hurt their arms, right? That's the big. We can't have guys pitching too many innings in an all-star game hurt their arms. I agree with that. So load up on as many pitchers as you want. But you don't need two first basemen, two second basemen, two shortstop. Like, this is not Noah's Ark. It's an all-star team. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if a guy gets selected as an all-star and he's a shortstop and he's a backup, like, he can play second base for the all-star. Why? Because that's what you do in, like, Little League Baseball. All these guys can play other positions. Does it mean it's for a championship? No. So, in order, three different things. One, every team doesn't need to be represented. I believe the reason they do that is the intent was so that every different market would have somebody who would draw eyes. Is there one person in Detroit that's not named Jimenez? That's like, I wasn't going to watch the All-Star game, but Joe Jimenez is pitching. Maybe at some point in the sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth inning, he might throw to one hitter, so I'm going to watch. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Not enough people watch the All-Star game anyway. No one's watching the All-Star game to see a guy pinch hit or to see somebody throw to one batter or one inning. You watch the All-Star game because you're a baseball fan. You want to see the best guys play baseball, period. All-Stars should be stars. The roster should easily be capped out, okay? At, like, I don't know, 12 position players, and then you can have, unlimited pitchers. I don't even care how many pitchers. But I want the best of the best. I want to know who the best shortstop is. I want to be the best third baseman is, best first baseman, best second baseman. And then whoever the next best couple of guys are, if somebody don't want to play first base the whole game, fine, we'll replace him. And you got to have two catchers. And you know what? You might go through two catchers. You need a third one. I guarantee there's somebody who's playing third base, who's playing the outfield, that's played catcher. I can catch an inning. Like, these players can't do. Of course they can. It would make it more fun for them and more interesting to watch. And they just haven't played a baseball game. We so massively overthink this thing. It's ridiculous. Every team doesn't have to be represented. Cut some of this roster down. Make it a true select group of the best 12 position players in the sport. And then here's the last thing. My belief is three factors in an all-star selection. What have you done this year is important. It does not trump what you've done your entire career. And to me, I even think it's the third most important thing in what have you done over the last 12 months. Let me give you an all-star selection, which I would call into question. Matt Kemp. And you might say to yourself, Gottlieb, didn't you go to the Dodger game? Yep. Don't you live in Los Angeles? Yep. Doesn't Matt Kemp belong as an all-star? Based on how he's played this year, okay? Sure, but Matt Kemp wasn't even supposed to make the Dodgers. Matt Kemp had been an all-star previously, but last year Matt Kemp was bad. How does that not factor in at all? At all. He was not good last year. He had a negative WAR last year. A negative WAR. Wins above replacement. In other words, they would win more games when he wouldn't play than when he would play. Based on stats, okay? I know that WAR is a lot more complicated than that, but to guys like me, the layman, like, wins above replacement, wait, they win less games when he plays than when he doesn't play? I believe you should factor in the last 12 months, not just the first 4 months of this season. What has he done since the last All-Star game? So that's how I select an All-Star team.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's welcome in Antonio Daniels. He covers the Thunder for a living. Of course, he was an NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs. How much would I have to pay you to attend two games of a baseball doubleheader?
Oh, wait. Oh, let's not go there. Let's not go there. No, that's not going to happen. With all due respect to baseball and Major League Baseball and the players, yeah, I can't do that.
I got a bunch of things I want to get to with you. Let me start with Summer League. How much have you been watching?
I enjoy watching Summer League. I don't enjoy the way it's covered, but I really enjoy watching it.
From what aspect, how it's covered? You mean the actual commentary or the Twitter commentary or the radio commentary? What part of how it's covered?
No, just the amount of pressure that's put on guys and what we say about them. To me, Summer League is like preseason football. You know, it's like in preseason football, if your team does well, it's fantastic. But then people always come back to the same thing. You can't win either way in Summer League. So you look at somebody like Trae Young. All I see is from every possible angle, he's getting beat up. So if he plays well, you know what people say? Oh, well, you know
just,
what?
Just Summer League.
It's only Summer League. It's just Summer League. He's playing against second and third string guys, so it doesn't matter. And if he struggles, he's a bust. So he can't win either way. So for me, I enjoy watching it, but I really enjoy watching these young guys grow. I don't enjoy the amount of pressure they're under. And then once the season starts, then you can really start to truly evaluate what somebody can become in the future, not in Summer League.
Have you watched Trae Young?
Yes.
What do you think?
I mean, it's Summer League. So I'm not – I mean, some of the things that people have an issue with are going to be an issue because he's 18 years old, 19 years old. You know, I say all the time, he's 1 year removed from prom. So all of these different issues that people are having with him, like, I'm sorry. I mean, when a guy's 1 year removed from prom, he's drafted, and now he's supposed to be the face of your franchise, do you really think he's ready for that or the amount of pressure that the media and everyone else is putting him under? No, he's not. So for me, I'd much rather sit back, watch the product grow, watch the product develop, and then maybe sling some sort of judgment toward him in the future.
Oh, this is fine, but I'll just give you, like, if we do actual basketball talk about it, instead of, I don't want to comment on other people's comments. My thing is, like, look, he didn't play any defense in college, okay? Which, look, when you get to the pros, now it gets real. You get challenged. You look across and you start to get challenged. I've seen a lack of forget about the fact that he's not a great athlete. It's now when you're a top pick, when you're the fifth pick of the draft, to still not offer up any sort of effort defensively when everyone's watching you, that's a problem. And then there's the problems to which I don't know how much is going to improve based upon how his body improves, which is, can he get a step? I don't even care about the shot making, but the shots keep coming from further and further out because he can't seem to get by guys, and he can't seem to guard people. You know, you're in a league now where everybody switches, so he can't guard point guards. I don't know who he can guard on the floor. Like, I think it's going to be a problem, regardless of the fact that he's 19. He's going to play, and there's some major issues there that have been uncovered at times in college that right now continue to be an issue in Summer League.
Yeah, for me, I don't – number one, I hear you. As far as the defensive intensity, I think that'll come in time and understanding. But also, he was – I mean, with all due respect, he wasn't drafted for his defensive intensity. That's not what he was drafted for. He was drafted because he could score and he could make guys around him better. And that's what I say. When I say the development that comes along with it, he's always going to be small. He's always going to be small in stature. But the thing that he'll have to learn in time, which will come with NBA reps, is learn to compete and how to compete.
You think you learn to compete? I mean, don't you either have or don't have that?
No, you learn. You learn in time because once you learn, this is not Oklahoma. And what you're used to is Big 12 basketball. What you're used to is Big 12 talent. It's a different case and scenario when you leave the Big 12 and you leave the NCAA and you come to a league where everybody 1 through 12 can play. Everybody 1 through 12 can play. So you may be able to get away with dogging it on defensively for Lon Kruger. You may be able to get away with that at Oklahoma. You might be able to, because the fact of the matter is you're putting up 30 points a night. You're leading the NCAA in points and also in assists. When you come to this next level and you got guys coming at your head every day, it sets a different mindset. It brings out a different motivation within you. A lot of times that you didn't know that you had or needed to have.
Antonio Dan is joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so since we've last spoken, Carmelo Anthony, when the news came out that Carmelo Anthony and the Thunder are eventually going to part ways in some form or fashion. It had to happen because of tax, but
right.
Did it also
right.
have to happen because of the fact that there wasn't a role that he wanted to fulfill?
I think that helped the process, and it's very rare in this league where you can actually say something works out the best way for both sides. For Oklahoma City Thunder, this is a great scenario for you because now you have an opportunity to shop Melo, see what you can get for him, and you have an opportunity to rid yourself of that $100 million of taxes that you were just talking about. But here's my question to you, Doug, if you're Carmelo.
Okay.
Do you really think going to a different situation, whether it's Houston or whether it's the Lakers, is going to change your role? If you go to Houston, you're going to be in a third option. No one's going to allow you to be that guy that you wanted to be. So do you think changing scenes of whatever it may be, as far as going to the Lakers or going to Houston or anywhere else, do you think his role is going to change or be any different than it was in Oklahoma City?
No, I think, though, that here's where it does. He may accept it better, or he may be forced to accept it. Twofold. One, you know how it is. If you're making league minimum, even if you get the $27 million paid, right, or whatever they buy out, pecking order is not just based upon the respect you have. But, like, look, dude, you're a minimum deal. Okay, you're cuttable. You're releasable. You don't like it? That's fine.
Right.
We can eat that deal. So I think that helps it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it helps
for
it.
Sure.
I think theoretically, again, this is theoretically, it helps it when you have other better stars than him on the team that can cajole him, whether it's Chris Paul, who's a friend, LeBron James, who's a friend. Hey, if I'm the Warriors, I don't think it's crazy for the Warriors to kick the tires on Melo. Only in that,
oh, neither.
Like, look, we got our dudes. We just need somebody to come off the bench occasionally and get buckets. Like Mo Spates didn't play any defense when he played for them. He just come off and get buckets.
Right.
Melo's five times the player of Mo Spates. So, and you look, if you want to accept that role, if you don't, fine, that's okay. And I think it's if you get into the relationship with open, honest dialogue, and you're making minimum money, I think it's possible, not likely, but possible that it works.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I do agree with that. I think relationship means a lot. When you start talking about his relationship with LeBron James and his relationship with Chris Paul, I agree. There's not just relationship, but there's the amount of respect there between those guys as well. I agree.
Does the Cousins thing actually make them better? It part of it makes them different,
yeah.
Right? They've always played small,
yeah,
when they want to win. Does it actually make them better?
Yeah. You know why I think it makes them better, Doug? Because, number one, they don't have to face DeMarcus Cousins. So I think that's one of the reasons it makes them better. Because the kryptonite for the Golden State Warriors, so many people thought, was the Anthony Davis along with DeMarcus Cousins, where they had difficulty matching up.
The Thunder beat them twice last year, and they play with Steven Adams. They just be super physical, right? Beat them up on the boards.
Right.
Be really physical with them.
Right. And that's easier. The thing is, it's not about beating them twice. That sounds great. And I said this during the regular season. When you start talking about the regular season, it's fantastic if you beat Golden State twice, even three times. But when you start talking about the postseason and the playoffs, to eliminate the Golden State Warriors, you have to beat them four times. That's very difficult to do with a certain style of basketball. But if you have a DeMarcus Cousins, a guy that teams will have a very difficult time matching up with, especially Golden State, with Draymond Green at the five spot, they will have a hard time controlling DeMarcus Cousins. Now, you don't have to worry about him. So now you don't have to worry about playing against them. So if you're Golden State, it gives you another option. So if an injury happens, if a Kevin Durant goes down, if a Steph Curry goes down, now it allows you to play a completely different style of basketball through someone that no one in his league can go one-on-one. Yes, I definitely think it makes him better because I think it makes him more versatile offensively.
Antonio Daniels joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What do you think ultimately happens with Kawhi?
Man, this is getting crazier by the day. And right now, I've said this from day one, it really wouldn't surprise me, Doug, if he was here once the season started. It would not surprise me. You continue to hear about, oh, I want to go to L.A., then Boston picked up track, and then Philly picked up track. Now I want to go to the Clippers, and all these different things are going on. And meanwhile, I'm here in San Antonio, and nothing's happening. So just days continue to pass and days continue to pass. If you're the San Antonio Spurs, the longer this goes, the more you lose leverage. So it would not surprise me at all, by any stretch of the imagination, if Kawhi Leonard was here.
Yeah, but, I mean, even if he doesn't want to be, even if he says, like, look, I've asked to be traded, you want to trade me, you know, my thighs still, he can do the my thighs still not ready thing.
But the thing is, if you're the Spurs, you're going to do what's in your best interest, always. So I get Kawhi Leonard coming out and saying, well, you know what? I want to go here, here, here. How often in professional sports is an organization is going to do what's in the best interest of the player? It's not going to happen. So you can have your little teams that you want to go to, the Lakers or the Clippers, but if they don't respond with youth, athleticism, assets, draft picks, all these other a package that the San Antonio Spurs likes, that it was best for the San Antonio Spurs, they're not going to move on it. That is not the Spurs way. That is not the way they do business. So I get Kawhi Leonard wanting to go certain places. It may come a point, and I'm not saying this is true, it may come a point where he actually has to go free agency.
Do you think the Thunder are better next year without Melo and Robertson coming back off of the knee?
Yes. Much better. And it has nothing to do with just Carmelo. It has to do with chemistry. Because now when day one of training camp starts, you don't have to know Paul George if you're Russell Westbrook. You don't have to understand where Steven Adams likes the ball if you're Paul George. They have a year under their belt together. And it may not have ended the way that the Thunder wanted it to, but you still can't discard it, the fact that it happened. Anytime you get an opportunity to start training camp new, without that newness, but with that comfortability attached to it, like, okay, we're coming into training camp with this year behind us. I don't have to know you. You don't have to know me. Now you add Andre Robertson back to the mix, an excellent defensive guard on the wing, and when him and Paul George were there, the Thunder were fantastic defensively as to who they could cover and what they could do defensively. So for that reason and chemistry alone, and plus just the fact that you have the whole free agency talk done, that's not an issue anymore. No one in that locker room is worrying about their foundation moving forward, worried about their future. All the issues that were issues last year won't be issues this upcoming season.
Great stuff. Antonio Daniels covers the Thunder for a living. He's an NBA champion and a really good dude who covers the league. Antonio, thanks for joining us, man.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, brother.